With stagnant wages, inflation, and discriminatory practices in financial services, do you fear your retirement years will be more like the Golden Corral than the Golden Girls?
If so, you're luckier than a drag queen with a wardrobe malfunction and a safety pin, because you're listening to Queer Money episode number 494. And today we're sharing our multi-pronged approach to building generational wealth to fund your retirement years and beyond.
Let's get down to business. You're listening to the Queer Money Podcast, personal finance with a rainbow twist.
Queer Money is dedicated to financial independence, financial well-being, investing knowledge, and the intersection of all things money as an LGBTQ person. With no fees or minimums and no overdraft fees, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision in the history of decisions. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank for details. Capital One, N.A., member FDIC. David?
Yes.
There's something that's really hard.
Okay. What, fractions?
Oh, yeah. There are a few things that are really hard.
If you're following us on Threads, you'll understand what I mean by that.
No, planning for retirement is hard. And then the added layer of being LGBT makes it even harder. So we're going to tackle an new solution today to help people plan for retirement that they might not have considered before, because before, ideas don't work.
Yeah. Although I will say, you know, folks, it's not impossible. I'm part of a LGBT retirement group on Facebook, and there are thousands of people in there. And I see people all the way from ages in their mid-40s till their 70s who are planning for or have retired. And it's amazing to me how many LGBT people are actually in a really good space when it comes to having planned for and financially being prepared for retirement and actually doing it. And now they're doing things like exciting things like trying to figure out where in the world that they're going to retire. Some of them are retiring in the place that they've always lived, and some of them are trying to decide, are they going to move to a blue state? Are they going to move out of the country? Are they going to move to a place where they have more friends and family? And it just is can be a really exciting time in your life if you have laid the foundation for a good retirement.
And we're going to talk about how to lay that foundation here later on in the episode. So why don't we dive into it?
Yeah. So let's first of all talk about some unique retirement planning challenges that our community faces. Now, the first one I'm going to share with you here is hyperbolic discounting. Now, hyperbolic discounting is not something that is exclusive to the LGBT community. Hyperbolic discounting is actually YOLO. Live for today, because you never know what tomorrow is going to be like. And I think that for our community, especially, the original YOLOers were queer people who were experiencing the HIV/AIDS crisis and had this kind of carpe diem idea about life of, I'm 25, I don't know if I'm going to make it to 30 or 35. I'm 40 and I'm seeing all of my friends around me dying. And they started to live this, let's live for today and not worry about tomorrow life, because so many people were getting sick. As a matter of fact, 28% of Americans say right now that they have nothing saved for retirement. 39% aren't contributing to a retirement fund, and another 30% don't think that they will ever be able to retire. Those are some pretty startling statistics. Now,
yeah,
those aren't specific to our community, but we are definitely a part of those numbers. And we all know that when we start talking, typically when we start talking about data points, if it's a depressing data point, it's even more depressing when you look at the data from our community. And Go Banking Rates in 2024 talked about some of the obstacles that all folks are facing, but I think many in our community are probably dealing with this at an even higher level. Obstacles like inflation, the amount of debt we have, whether that's credit card debt or student loan debt, financial literacy, the fact that our community has oftentimes, and up until this podcast especially, and more recently with more queer personal finance experts talking about finances for our community, we've been left out of the conversation, left out of the data, left out of the topics about how to plan for retirement or saving. And many of us are starting too late. And we are inconsistent when it comes to making contributions. I remember a part of the one data point from the Debt-Free Guy's Motley Fool LGBTQ plus money study pointed out that the most common percentage that LGBT people were contributing to their 401k accounts was between 4 and 6%.
That's when they had access to a 401k.
Right. But the national average, which we know is mostly straight, right? Mostly non-LGBT people. The national average is, I think, floating at around 11.2 or 11.6%. So our community is not consistently making contributions to the plan that would help us be able to retire. And for a lot of us, that's because we are focused on this YOLO life, right? We don't know what our lives are going to be like 10, 20, 30 years down the line. And so many of us are making the decision to have fun and continue this hyperbolic discounting. And that was for John and I. You and I know that this was something that was really a major factor in why we got into $51,000 in credit card debt.
Yeah.
It was because we were all about having, we were learning from many of our gay elders, I would say, those who were older than us in the community when you and I came out, and watched what they were doing, and they were living it up. And so we just followed right along and lived it up.
And I think it's exceptional because we had our heads so deeply buried in the sand that despite having all the theoretical knowledge that we learned from being in the financial services industry, we were just sort of ignoring everything. And we were living completely contrary to everything that we new.
Yeah, exactly. But all of this is not necessarily brand new. This whole idea of not contributing to your retirement account. In 2019, data came out from the Insured Retirement Institute that said that 45% of baby boomers, people who are in their late 50s, early 60s and older right now, 45% of them have nothing saved for retirement. And of those who do have money saved for retirement, 28% of them say that they have about $100,000 saved. And what do we say about baby boomers? I mean, especially I hear this from millennials and Gen Z all the time. Baby boomers, they had everything, right? They had it all, right? They had lower priced homes and interest rates were lower and their jobs were paying better compared to the cost of living. And yet, we're looking at 3 out of every 5 baby boomers not having enough money saved to be able to enjoy retirement. That's pretty startling. And that, to me, is probably more likely of what we're going to see, or maybe even worse, what we're going to see for many LGBT people.
And to be fair, that's not all due to hyperbolic discounting. There are other variables that we'll talk about here later in this episode that contribute to that lack of retirement planning or the lack of ability to be able to plan for retirement. But hyperbolic discounting is definitely a critical factor in that. I think another unique challenge for our community, and we've talked about this ad nauseum on the podcast, unfortunately, because it deserves repeating until it's solved, is that we just struggle from being paid less than the general population. Study right. after study shows that we are starting to see some incremental increases if you look at certain subsets of the LGBTQ population. But by and large, the LGBTQ plus community just earns less than the general population. In fact, our friends over at the Center for LGBTQI plus Economic Advancement and Research, CLEAR, in 2023 did a study that found that 50% of respondents to a study that they did, or household incomes, reported household incomes of less than $50,000 a year, compared to 36% of adults nationwide. So that's a startling contrast. But then go to the next level higher, 13% of LGBTQIA plus respondents reported incomes over $100,000 a year, which is great. But when you compare that to the 34% of the general population who report having incomes $100,000 or higher, we're just not earning nearly as much as the general population. And by and large, you know, we've talked about this on the show as well, right? That wages, even though they're starting to tick up a little bit here and there recently, they're pretty much flatlined with the 1970s, and inflation has not had the same kind of flatline performance.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting that statistic of 13% of us earning $100,000 a year or more. We know that we gravitate towards more expensive cities, right? So I would venture to say that probably maybe 95 or maybe even more percent of those people who are earning that $100,000 are likely living in very expensive cities, right?
Right. So the margins are still tight.
Right. If we know that California has the largest population of LGBT people in the country, and we know what the cost of living is.
It's the most expensive state in the country.
Right. So you might be living in San Francisco making $100,000 a year, but you're living paycheck to paycheck and falling further and further behind.
What was that stat that you're still poor in San Francisco, even if you earn $120,000 a year, right?
Yep. Yeah, yeah, I think it was 109,000. This was last year. Maybe that's been updated. But in 2023, the data point was if you made $109,000 living in San Francisco, you were basically at the poverty line.
Yeah.
And that's just crazy. Unlivable. Yeah. The other thing is we've seen stagnant wages, right? And that I think was exacerbated for many in our community during the pandemic, right? Where when we saw so many, I think it was 3/4 of LGBT people who responded to a survey said that they were fired, furloughed, or had their hours cut during the pandemic. And that is just a crazy statistic.
Queer Money is made possible by Capital One. Capital One believes that financial well-being includes your mental, physical, and financial health. Check out CapitalOne.com today.
But the other thing is we know that there's discrimination in the financial services industry. We've talked about this. The study that we did with Motley Fool, the Debt-Free Guys Motley Fool LGBTQ plus money study, in 2023, 55% of the respondents said that they had experienced some sort of discrimination in financial services. And it's even higher for folks who are trans and non-binary. That showed 74%. And that's actually up. You know, we would like to see or think that these numbers are getting better because these organizations are doing so much better and reaching out to the community. But that data point is actually higher than it was in 2022, when it was 48% of the community saying they've been discriminated against and 67% of trans folks saying they had been discriminated against. And so we know that discrimination, it kind of pushes many of our people in our community away from things like buying a home, investing, getting themselves set up financially for a better future.
Yeah, I think for a lot of people, going to a bank or a credit union or financial advisors' offices is almost like, LGBT people anyway, is almost like going back like into the high school locker room.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, here I go. This is the stale male and pale industry that's not very inviting to me. And they may be all very judgy if they're not out and out rude to me. And so I just kind of don't want to engage with that. And I think that's part of why our study with the Motley Fool found that we tend to use fewer financial products that help people build wealth because we just don't want to engage with that. But many of us relatively more so have engaged with crypto than we have with saying getting insurance.
Right. Well, it's anonymous, but it's also much riskier.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, yeah, Bitcoin is at the moment of this recording, Bitcoin is doing quite well, but you look back 6 months or a year ago and there were a lot of people who went from being Bitcoin millionaires to being Bitcoin
broke.
Yeah.
So, okay, a fourth unique challenge for our community when it comes to retirement planning kind of goes back to your first one, David, is that there aren't as many LGBTQ plus folks who are of the older generation that we have to look up to. I mean, so many, and we just talked about this with a colleague of ours who's going to be coming on the show here shortly, that there are just, you know, for us specifically, there were just so many gay men who would be sort of our mentors, so to speak, or people who we could look up to who just aren't there. They never had the opportunity to live. And so now we don't necessarily have mentors to look up to. And so we're kind of all still sort of living this sort of like 80s mentality, but we've kind of got to adapt because even those who have HIV AIDS today are still living into their 60s, 70s, and in some cases 80s because of the advancements of medicine. And I think there have been now two instances where somebody has been cured of AIDS. I don't know exactly how legit that is, but the reports start coming out. It's a good sign. So that means that we need to start adapting our retirement planning to the current situation and not kind of keep living in the past, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly. And number five here is that, and I think even especially for people in that generation who are alive, it's still taboo to talk about money in our community. And we see that the folks who talk about money, whether you're in our community or not in our community, the more you talk about money, the more you learn, the better decisions you make, the better your finances are. And we're still in our community more inclined to talk about sex, politics, and pop culture than we are to talk about money. It's unfortunate that that's the case, right? I think maybe on top of that, an added layer is that in our community, there's a very strong minority who are very vocal that if you do have money, you're a bad person. And we need to flip that script because our community needs to be financially strong because that's how we can fight back. That's one of the ways that we can fight back against the push to take our rights away.
Yeah, it's almost like some of us have sort of adopted the sort of Catholic Church or just church mentality that there's dignity in poverty. and there's shame in wealth.
There isn't any dignity in poverty.
No, you can't, you don't, you just, in the world that we live in, whether it's right or wrong, in the world that we live in, without money, you don't have power or influence. And so more of us, and that's the whole reason why we started the podcast, right? To improve the financial well-being of the community so that we could strengthen the community. We're stronger as individuals when we're financially stronger. And then we have more time, money, and autonomy to be able to support the organizations and causes who are protecting and pushing for our rights.
Yeah.
So let's talk now about some of the systemic issues that all of us face when we're retirement planning, whether we're straight or LGBTQ plus, and that are there are several factors that are affecting all of us. So when you take the unique challenges that we have, then you compound that with the general challenges that we have, it just makes it that much harder for us as LGBTQ plus folks to plan for retirement. So some of those are, you know, obviously we're dealing with inflation now, definitely down from the peak of June of 2022 with regard to inflation when we were at 9.1%. But even though we're now down to 3.15%, and that's starting to tick up from January, I think a lot of us have not gotten over the PTSD of the skyrocketing inflation that we dealt with just a couple of years ago.
Well, our wages didn't catch up, right?
Right.
For many people, I don't know too many people who recently in the last year have gotten a 9 or 10% increase in their salary, no. Right?
People are skipping out of the office if they got a 2% or 3% raise, because that's as good as you can hope in corporate America.
Right. So if you got a, even if you got a 5% raise, I do know some people who shared with us that their companies were generous with them during the pandemic and they got a 5% raise. That doesn't, a 5%, it's laughable, right? When inflation is at 9.1% and you get a 5% raise, you may be excited that you got a 5% raise, but you still went back by 4.1% I'm not doing the math correctly right there, but it's close to being behind by 4%. And so we're still feeling it, right? We're still feeling that because when we do everything that we do in our daily lives, it's just more expensive. And so we're it's kind of screwed still.
Yeah, that's why there's one part of the economy, a recent study showed that makes people, causes them an adverse reaction, almost to the point where in some cases they're getting angry. And it's a part of everyday life that, I mean, many of us probably did today, if not this week, and that is going to the grocery store. There was a recent study by a Harris poll that found that 59% of respondents said simply going to the grocery store makes them upset, up to the point where they're like angry about it. Yeah. And that's because, you know, we're paying a whole lot more for a whole lot less, and wages just have not kept up with that. So this part of everyday life, just simply going to get milk, bread, and eggs, just kind of causes this financial anxiety for people. And that just makes them angry.
I kind of chuckled or laughed when John brought that up, because after we get done recording the podcast we're going to record today, we're going grocery shopping. And I'm kind of waiting to see the anger and frustration in people's, you know, I think people get more aggressive when they're angry and frustrated, they get more aggressive with their shopping carts, right? And so it's almost like we need to be wearing
armor
or pads, like we're playing a football game when you go to the grocery store, because somebody's going to run you over with your cart because they're rushed for time. They're angry. They're stressed financially. They're anxious. All of those things.
Right. If gas prices tend to be ticking up, then so not only is it causes you anxiety by going to the grocery store, but actually going from your house to the grocery store, the actual drive is making people angry.
Right.
So, you know, and this is something that came up in our 2023 and 2022 study with Motley Fool. The 2023 study said that 63% of respondents said that just keeping up the cost of living was their top financial concern. So W-2 income just isn't covering that. And so we're going to talk a little bit here shortly about how we can complement the incomes that we're getting from our employers. The other thing is, up until a couple months ago, pundits were just obsessed about a looming recession. And while that never happened, there's still some anxiety that a lot of us had because we thought we were going to revisit 2008 all over again, or that 2020 was going to happen all over again. And again, we were going to get our hours cut, our wages cut, or we're going to lose our jobs altogether, or that somebody in our household was going to lose their job and our expenses were going to get a little bit more precarious. So, you know, we're all still dealing with that. The third thing that we're all dealing with, regardless of your gender or sexual orientation or whatever, however you vote, the majority of Americans are not happy with the direction the country is going. So we won't get political here, but it's just causing a lot of people frustration with the direction of the country. So you couple all of that with the fact that household credit card debt just crossed $1.3 trillion for the first time. We haven't solved the student loan debt crisis, that, you know, all that together, the American dream has just never been harder to achieve than it is today. In fact, there was dual studies done by Investopedia and Georgetown University that found that it costs the average, this is crazy to me, costs the average individual $3.4 million over their lifetime to achieve the quote American dream. But the average worker can only expect to earn about $1.7 million over their lifetime. So there's this gigantic chasm between what people want or what we're told is the ideal American lifestyle and compared to what we can actually achieve. It's just never been harder than it is today. And then so those of us who are thinking that we're going to be able to rely on mom and dad to give us inheritance to sort of help us bridge that gap, it's a little precarious thinking because a report by Cerulli Associates in 2021 found that 93% of baby boomers are not expecting to inherit a single penny to their children. So I don't
my parents are baby boomers. Your parents are baby boomers. I know a lot of people, whether you're Gen X or millennial, I know a lot of people who are expecting their baby boomer parents to give them money. And you just think about it, 20 or 30 years ago, the average life expectancy for somebody was way less than it is today. People are living way much longer. And the fact that you're living longer is a good thing, right? It's a good thing that you're living longer. But what also ends up happening is because you're living longer, you're spending more money. And also, for many people who are living longer, they're living longer because of the healthcare and pharmaceutical industry today, which means they're getting more money sucked out because of that. And that's why so many people just won't have any money to inherit to their kids.
Well, the average person in retirement right now is expected to live about 20 years in retirement. So that percentage of people, retirees who have $100,000, that $100,000 is not going to go very far. And then on top of that, the average 1 year stay at a nursing home that doesn't require any special amenities for special medical needs is about $108,000 a year. So all that on top of the fact that what is the statistic that percentage of boomers or parents who are still paying for their adult children's expenses?
So parents, 49%, this was in 2023, 49% of parents were still paying for some aspect of their children's daily life, whether that's contributing towards their rent, paying for their car insurance, paying for their cell phone bill, all of those kinds of things. And what was really interesting, I thought was really interesting, was that number was at 11% for people who are 35 and older. If you're 35 and older and still relying on your parents financially, I hope that you have a really good excuse. I hope it's not just that you aren't making enough money or that you're, I hope it's really because you are physically or mentally in this space where you're not able to earn enough money because your parents really need that money to be able to live out a safe and comfortable retirement.
Right. And that's exactly why they're not going to have the money to give it to you after they pass away.
Yeah. I guess you may think about that. Take it now or take it later. Let them be able to use the money that they've earned to live a happy retirement. And maybe they'll have a pot of gold waiting for you at the end.
Yeah.
You take it all from them now, they may be coming to you asking to dip into your pot of gold.
Yeah. Help cover my expenses. Yeah. At the very least, pay for my coffin.
Yeah. So the whole conversation here we wanted to have was to start talking about how you can fund your retirement. So let's talk about some traditional ways that many people fund their retirement.
Or have funded maybe in the past.
Yeah.
Well,
people who are retiring right now, because some of these things are, at least one of these things is accessible to people right now, more people right now. And that's the first one. And that's pensions. Fewer and fewer companies are offering pensions. Actually, the Bureau of Labor Statistics said that right now, roughly only about 15% of private industry workers have access to a pension. If you're not familiar with what pensions are, because we don't really talk about them anymore. For a lot of people, the way that a pension worked was you put in your time at a particular company, and that company was putting money into a gigantic pool, and then you would be able to withdraw a defined amount based on when you decided to retire. So it's almost like Social Security in that you would take a specific amount every single month or every single year out of the pension pool. And that's how many of them worked, but so few companies are offering those today. And we did see, especially during the 80s and 90s, we saw a lot of companies who had pensions, and those pensions basically went broke because they didn't have enough money set aside for those people.
So for comparison, a 401k is considered a defined contribution plan. A pension is considered a defined benefit plan. You have a very specified benefit you're going to get from it when you've met the benchmarks to qualify for it. Whereas now you have a very specified contribution that you can make, and whether the outcome is positive or negative is ultimately up to you, a little bit of luck in the stock market.
Yeah. The second thing that a lot of folks are using today for retirement is Social Security. But what's interesting is that data shows that for those who are retired and living on Social Security, Social Security only makes up about 40%, covers only about 40% of their living expenses. So that means the vast majority of people are pulling on something else. Now, some of them may be pulling on a pension, but more often than not, they're pulling on some sort of other savings. We'll talk about those in a minute. But what we're seeing is that the average payment that goes out to someone who is taking Social Security benefits was about $1,909 a month in 2024.
Who can live on that? You need to have something else to complement that, because there's just no way, except for maybe in some of the smallest cities in the middle of the country that apparently we're not allowed to live in, can you make that cover your expenses?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, if you don't have a mortgage in retirement and everything about where you live is basically taken care of financially, you may be able to get by on $1,900 a month, especially if you're living with someone else, right? Between the two, if you're making about the same, you got about $3,800, you may be able to get by. I think somebody living here in Toledo right now could possibly get by. And then when I say get by, I'm talking about have bare bones lifestyle, right? Get by. But if you're living in a city like San Francisco, LA, or like you said, the only cities we're allowed to live in the country as LGBT people, you can't live on $1,900. Yeah. So you're going to have to come up with something else.
And politicians don't seem to want to fix this.
Right.
Right. This is something that both sides of the aisle keep bringing up, and both sides of the aisle keeps kicking to the can down the road. And I think for a lot of people, because they don't come up with a solution, they're concerned that at some point, Social Security will dry up and they won't have access to any of that. For that, if you're concerned about that, listen to Queer Money episode number 416 with Mike Piper. He is an accountant that talks about how there will always be some portion of Social Security that we're all going to be able to pull from, just not as rich and plentiful as $1,900 a month.
Exactly. One of the other things is that a lot of people are pulling on retirement accounts, right? Whether that's a traditional IRA, a Roth IRA, or a company sponsored account. We've talked about those on the podcast a number of times, 401ks, 403bs, 457, especially if you're working in education or the nonprofit sector, you're going to see those latter two. But, you know, unfortunately, I think these aren't working that well for a lot of people either.
No, well, I think part of the problem is that people are struggling to cover everyday living expenses, that it's a privilege if you have the opportunity to be able to contribute to your retirement account. Now, we talked a little bit about systemic and unique challenges that the community faces. So we do have some responsibility, but some people are just struggling to make ends meet. So, you know, and when every day is a struggle to get through, sometimes you just kind of need that glass of wine today rather than maybe contributing to your 401k so you can have that glass of wine tomorrow. And it shouldn't be that way, but sometimes it is. And so actually, we're excited that we're going to be hosting Teresa Ghilarducci shortly on the Queer Money podcast to talk about her book that just came out, Work, Retire, Repeat. I'm about halfway through it, and it's really good. She talks a lot about how the current model for retirement just isn't working and we need to come up with a new solution. And that's part of what we're going to talk about here in a little moment.
One of the other things is talking about the systemic issues. What we're seeing right now is that instead of contributing to 401k accounts, people are actually pulling money out.
Yeah.
A record number of people in 2023 pulled money out of their retirement accounts.
Because, 401ks specifically.
Yeah, because they labeled it as they took a hardship distribution. That's 3.6% of workers. That is up from 2.8% in 2022. That shows how stressed people are financially, that for whatever reason, they are deciding to pull on their future money in addition to their present money to be able to cover their cost of living.
Yeah. The other is personal savings. The savings on taxable accounts just aren't necessarily there. The median savings account balance right now per bank rate is $8,000. So we don't necessarily have the money in our retirement accounts. We don't necessarily have them in taxable, more easily accessible accounts. So that's just not providing people the quality of living, the standard of living that they either should have access to or would like to have access to.
And I know a lot of folks are looking to their home as their savior, right? We're seeing more and more people pile money into the property that they own, whether that is buying a bigger and bigger and bigger property as you scale up and continuing your mortgage lifeline or lifetime. But a lot of folks are looking forward to this idea of being able to tap their equity in their home. And it's interesting, from the data that we did some research on, less than 2% of people who are over the age of 62 are pulling money out of their home through a reverse mortgage.
I was kind of surprised by that.
Yeah,
I thought that was going to be a lot higher.
I thought so too, but this could be one of the reasons why. 40% of people today who are over the age of 64 said that they retired and still have a mortgage. Right. So
less to draw on.
Right. You can still tap the equity in your home. If you have a mortgage, you can still tap it through a reverse mortgage, but there's a lot less of it to be able to tap, right? Your home may be worth, let's just say your home is worth $600,000, but your mortgage is $400,000. You've only got $200,000 in equity to be able to pull out. And when you go to try to get that reverse mortgage, they're going to probably say, we'll give you access to maybe $100,000 or $50,000 of that. That's not going to go very far in retirement.
Not at all.
Especially if you have to use some of that money to then pay your mortgage. Right?
No sense.
So it's, yeah, you're borrowing money to be able to pay off the money that you're borrowing, and it just goes in a big circle. Right?
So that financial services firm that shall not be named used to have a billboard in Denver, and I'm sure other cities as well, that said a home is not a retirement plan. And I think, I mean, fundamentally, that should be the case, that your home is not a retirement plan, but theoretically it should be the case. But I think for more people, it's kind of hard with everything else not necessarily working out the way it should. Most people's whatever money they have is invested in their home. And so trying to tap into that is maybe their lifeline.
So what is the solution? How can we fund our happy gay retirement?
Exactly. This is not just a depressing episode. So taking all this into account, David and I have done a lot of thinking about what the solutions are, what we've done to apply to our own lives to help put us in a better financial position, as well as we're rapidly approaching our 500th episode. So we've talked about money between the two of us a lot.
A little bit.
And we've talked with a lot of experts in various fields, different niches within personal finance. So putting all that together, we've kind of come up with a strategy that we call the Wealth Builders Pyramid. It's not a pyramid scheme. We're not going to try to get you to work under us and hire more people to work for you, and so we can benefit from all that. It's basically a multi-pronged approach that we put together that we think is a strategy that people need to consider to try to augment what basically W-2s aren't providing people, or the current system is not providing people. I'm curious to hear what Teresa has to say. But our proposal is a multi-pronged approach, and that is to start to use the tools that are available to build wealth, which is contrary to what we're finding from the 2022 and 2023 Motley Fool, Debt Free Guys, LGBTQ plus money studies. So this is an encouragement to do so. One of the easiest ways for most of us to build wealth is investing in the stock market. We've said it before, we'll say it again. There's no part of the economy designed for success quite like the stock market. There could be nefarious reasons for that, but we can either join the bandwagon or we can struggle. So we're encouraging you, to the extent that you can, to join the bandwagon. There was a study done a couple of years ago that surveyed 10,000 millionaires that asked them how exactly they crossed that millionaire milestone. Was it an inheritance? Was it a windfall of cash, say from a lottery? Were they just sitting in their ivory tower for their entire career earning 6+ figure salaries? And the answer to all that was no. 80% of them responded back saying that simply consistently contributing to their company-sponsored retirement plan, specifically their 401k, is how they crossed that millionaire milestone. So more of us need to start accessing a 401k or a company-sponsored retirement plan. If you don't work for a company that offers one, you need to encourage them to create one, or you might need to consider bouncing, and then start contributing as much as possible. And at the very least, contribute enough to get the 100% of your corporate match, because that's just free money you're leaving on the table. As we learned from the Capital One 2022 financial well-being surveys, this is something that people kind of already know. 38% of respondents to that study said simply opening an account, just taking the step to open that account, is a healthy choice. 46% of respondents to that study said that investing is a healthy choice. So I think fundamentally, we all kind of know this, but we're just not doing it for various reasons. And I think we need to sort of raise it up on our list of priorities.
Yeah, maybe take a step back from the politics, pop culture, and sex conversations, and spend a little bit of that time.
Exactly. Well, people in Texas can't access Pornhub anymore, so they Right. Start spending your time investing in the stock market.
Right. All right. The second aspect of the approach that we are suggesting as a part of the Wealth Builders Pyramid is to invest in real estate. And what's interesting is that for many people, when they hear invest in real estate, they think about, okay, I need to go buy a home. And a home is the first step. But when you have a home, unless you're going to tap it through something like a home equity line of credit on a regular basis, which you can't really do for long-term in retirement, or you're going to tap it through a reverse mortgage, you're not going to get any cash or have anything to live off of when it comes to your home. And so we need to start thinking about, how do I make money from the real estate that I have? And so this is where John and I have done some research and have some life experience on, that we want to encourage more people to actually start thinking about getting income from the real estate that they own. And the way that that can start is through the process of called house hacking. House hacking is the example that we'll give is what we're doing right now. John and I could have afforded to buy a 2,400 square foot home here in Toledo for ourselves.
And our puppies.
And our puppies. And just said that's, we're fine with that. And lived in a home that for us is too big, but it may be the right size for you. But instead of doing that, we decided to buy a duplex. And we bought a 2,400 square foot duplex. And we are renting one portion of it and we're living in the other. And the rent from that one portion is helping bring our living expenses down. It's income for us. And that's not the only way you can do this. You can do it through things like having a roommate. Or if you have a home and you have excess space, like you have a garage you're not using, or you have a shed you're not using, or an attic you're not using, there's a way to make money off of that. You can earn money through various tools to basically open up a small storage business for renting out that space, that you extra space that you have. And we actually do know people and have listened to stories of people who have done exactly that, where they have rented out their garage, or they've rented out the attic in their garage, those kinds of things. They've rented those spaces out. Now, granted, you're not going to be making six figures from that, but you are going to be able to make some money. And that brings that money in, all the way up to the point of thinking about actually having more rental properties. I know that this is a tough subject right now during this time period when housing is getting more and more expensive, but there's also ways to buy cheap, low-cost housing for yourself and have extra money left over so that you can rent to others.
And real estate investments just got 6% cheaper as of yesterday.
I don't know about 6%. John's talking about the whole change in the way realtors will be able to charge for.
Not exactly sure what that'll look like, but
right, exactly.
That's a funny quip. It's 6% discount.
The other thing about this is that you're able to take that income and extend it out, right? For as long as you own that property. So when you're in retirement, you may have multiple properties. And no matter what, there will always be people who need and want to rent. We know people who are making six figures and they are choosing to rent versus own a home.
For myriad reasons.
Yeah, lots of reasons.
Maybe not just because they can't afford it.
Right. And so there will always be a need for rentals. And so tap into that part of the market for yourself so that you can help fund your small business.
And so with stock market investing,
your retirement.
Yeah. So with stock market investing, real estate investing, and then small business investing, the idea is to open up your own small business to some varying degree, whether that's just a small Etsy shop or it's something that becomes a full-on business that takes up your full-time job like it's become for us, getting all those to generate at least 50% income to cover your living expenses. Or I didn't say that right. To cover
each one of those.
Yeah, each one of those.
To cover 50%. So you have 50% of your living expenses coming from the stock market, 50% of your income coming from real estate, and 50% coming from a small business.
Now, all of that will more than cover your living expenses.
Right. And the whole idea behind this Wealth Builders Pyramid is, you know, a triangle is the strongest shape, right? You put pressure on any side, the triangle isn't going to collapse. And that's exactly the way it is with what we believe is your access to money in retirement. Is if you have all three of these, if any one of those is under pressure, so the stock market may be down, the real estate market, you don't have somebody in one of your rentals, or for whatever reason, the economy is down and you're not earning enough from your small business, you will be able to hopefully be able to always be at about 100% or maybe even a little bit higher so that you can pad some for down years.
But there's one important thing to address first before you start building your pyramid, and that is?
That is a strong, solid financial foundation. And what does that mean? So there's three pieces to a strong, solid financial foundation. It's the triangle and underneath the triangle. And that is, one, not having a lot of high interest rate debt. The more debt you have, especially the higher interest rate debt, the more you have, the less money you have to put towards your goals in life and having fun, right? The second piece is having a strong emergency savings, at least $1,000. The more you have an emergency savings, the less anxious you will be financially. We know this personally because 2023 wasn't a great year for us financially, and we had to lean on our emergency savings. And thank God we did, because it did help us get through 2023. And then the third piece is having a good credit score, so that when you do need to go borrow money, whether that's because you're buying a new car or you're buying a new home or you're investing in real estate or you want to borrow some money to fund your small business, you will be able to spend a lot less money to get all of those things, which means you have more money to put towards those, more money to put towards the stock market, more money to put towards real estate investing, more money to put towards that dream small business.
Exactly. So with that, we have a special announcement. We now have a new and improved Queer Money Kickstarter. We know a lot of you have already signed up for it. You definitely want to sign up for it again, because we've really improved on it, and you want to make sure you don't miss some of the new information in there. If you have not signed up for the Queer Money Kickstarter, we highly encourage you to do so, because it's really designed to help you start to build that solid financial foundation, those initial first nine or so steps that you need to start building that financial foundation. Whether you have already gotten a copy or you are brand new to the Queer Money Kickstarter, you can get the updated version by clicking the link in your podcast player or the link in the description if you're watching us on YouTube. And then we're also in the middle of planning some ideas to see whether or not we can help the LGBTQ plus community do more to prepare for retirement. So in the Queer Money Kickstarter, you can indicate your level of interest, whether or not you want us to launch the Queer Money Retirement Club. We have a waiting list that we're acquiring right now for those who are interested in that. If we have enough folks that are interested in a Queer Money Retirement Club, sort of a program, a community of people designed to help build their wealth builder's pyramid and to talk about building wealth, building generational wealth, wealth that can be passed on to other LGBTQ plus people after we pass away. If you're interested in that, you can indicate that after you get the Queer Money Kickstarter. Also, we're toying with the idea of doing a Queer Money Conference, or sort of the ultimate, I said, level of really improving our financial well-being as a community. So you can indicate your level of interest in the Queer Money Kickstarter there. If a annual or semi-annual virtual, maybe even in real life, maybe a cruise someday, who knows, a Queer Money Conference where we're all kind of getting together and we're going to talk about ways that we can improve our financial well-being, strengthen ourselves as individuals, strengthen ourselves as a community, so that we have that security through retirement and beyond, and we have more money that we can use to continue to push for our rights. So for that, definitely make sure you get the updated version of the Queer Money Kickstarter either in the podcast description or in the description below. For that, stay tuned for the Queer Money Takeaway. In the market for a new ride? Capital One Auto Navigator makes car buying easier. Search for a car you love and pre-qualify for financing to see your real rate and monthly payment without impacting your credit score. Get started today. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/AutoNavigator for details. Thank you for joining us for another episode. This week's newsletter includes both your Queer Money Takeaway and resources mentioned in this episode, so be sure you're subscribed.
Then join us Thursday when we share the most affordable LGBTQ-friendly cities for climate migration, especially for those who, and I'll say this is something one person specifically asked for. So if you have a topic when it comes to our Queer Cities series, go ahead and let us know. But then also join us next Tuesday when we discuss dry promotions. This is a surprising way employers are getting folks to work more for less money, keeping those wages stagnant, as we discussed earlier, and harming minority folks especially.
So thank you and have a great week.